I couldn't help but notice in the introduction of the book, you say that you hope to establish Irvin Cobb as an important writer of a century ago. I think it's interesting how you used quotes of Cobb's that Ken Burns used in his documentary series about the national parks at the beginning of the introduction, almost as if you're backing people into that very notion. And I'll read a little bit of it. I'll try to do my best Ken Burns here.
Equally impressed was a humorist from Paducah, Kentucky, named Irvin S. Cobb.
I think my preconceived conception of the canyon was the same conception most people have before they come out to see it for themselves. A straight up and down slit in the earth. It is no such thing. Imagine the very heart of the world laid bare before our eyes. There's nothing between you and the Undertaker, except 6,000 feet, more or less, of dazzling Arizona climate. Having seen the canyon from the top, the next thing to do is to go down into it. Nearly everybody, on taking a look at the Grand Canyon, comes right out and admits its wonders are absolutely indescribable, and then proceeds to write anywhere from 2,000 to 50,000 words, giving the full details. In the presence of the Grand Canyon, language just simply fails you, and all the parts of speech go dead lame. When the Creator made it, he failed to make a word to cover it. Irvin S. Cobb.
He was first and foremost a great reporter and published millions of words over his lifetime. Cobb was able to work in human interest and the way people reacted to things. And he was really a great reporter. And he could phrase things better than anyone, I think, at that time. He had his failings, but he was such a great observer. He wrote a very famous description of the of a prize fight. He could write about anything. Baseball, he loved sports. He wrote about fishing. He wrote about hunting. Of course, he wrote about politics. And the sad thing about him is that, as I say in the book, in 1935, Will Rogers died in a plane crash at the height of his fame. And how Will Rogers' life would have played out after that, I think would have been, in many ways, kind of a downhill slide. Unfortunately, in some ways, Cobb outlived his time and became very embittered in his later life. And he also had a lot of health problems. He was terribly obese for much of his life. He had two very serious, what they called a gastric hemorrhage, and came near dying from at least one of those, maybe both of those. So he was not exactly the jolly old fellow you see in some of his pictures. He was very ambitious. He liked to make money. He liked to spend money. I looked up on the internet, his last home that he owned in California, in Santa Monica, is on the market right now or the valuation of it is over $10 million.
Wow.
Now, that's a lot of money. Now, he spent considerably less than that when he and his wife bought that home about 1935. He liked to travel. He loved people. As I make a point in the book, he was a paternalistic racist. I'm sure in his own way, he loved black people. This is the era in which he was born, and right after the Civil War, and he grew up in Paducah, which is really in the most southern part of Kentucky. And he just never was able to adjust to modern times on the race issue, but he was opposed to lynching. He went all the way back to Paducah in the early 20s to write editorials against the resurgent Ku Klux Klan. And if you read what he writes about blacks, it seems to be demeaning today. But when he wrote about blacks 100 years ago, he was writing about black people in the way that almost all Americans felt, North and South. So he wasn't just a Southern character. He was a national character.
Well, that leads me to the question, how important was Irvin Cobb in his time?
Well, 100 years ago, he would have been probably one of the most recognizable Americans, in some ways suffered from anxiety, maybe almost depression at times. But he came along at a time at the height of the illustrator, especially the ones you would have found in major magazines like the Saturday Evening Post and others. And then about 1920 or so, or even a little bit before that, photography became more and more in print and in magazines and newspapers. And of course, again, he could mug a shot at any time, and he was always good for a story. And so he was just a very popular man. And 100 years ago, if you didn't know anyone else in the country, you would have known about Irvin Cobb because he was always in the newspapers and in the press about something that had happened to him.
I seem to recall, I think it was in Wayne Chatterton's book about Cobb, referring to people in barbershops across the United States having arguments over who was funnier, Cobb or Will Rogers.
Yeah.
What prompted you to pick him as the subject of a biography?
Well, there have been good biographies written of him before by Chatterton. Of course, he had his own autobiography, and his daughter wrote a biography of him, and Anita Lawson wrote a biography. And Fred Newman, who was from Paducah, they all wrote good biographies. But Cobb was kind of the epitome of a type of humor in the early 20th century, moving from the country store type to big city. And he wrote humor as it was developing in the early 20th century. His style of humor did not suit a lot of people, even then. One of his greatest enemies, and he did have enemies, people that didn't like him very well, was H.L. Mencken. And Mencken, in several of his writings, would criticize Cobb as being, you know, not really that funny, and would go on to tell about what was wrong with Cobb, and Cobb was telling old jokes and so on and so forth. So there were people that didn't like him, and certainly one was H.L. Mencken. But if you read early reviews of his books and his stories from major newspapers like the New York Times and others, everybody liked his style of humor. Tended to be a little long-winded. He did write novels, and I'm sure his greatest ambition was to write the great American novel, as all authors would like to have. But and he did write some interesting stories, the Judge Priest stories. He wrote some things that were really quite modern for the time. One I can refer to is one called This Man's World. And Cobb was quite liberal on many things. One is he was not opposed to the women's right to vote. He was, of course, opposed to prohibition, which he thought was a great mistake. Mm. But this story, One Man's World, and I'll just read this. Two sisters, Annie and Anita, work in a big city department store for considerably less than their male counterparts. Because they're unable to support themselves, they must depend on men. Annie marries a manual laborer who tries to control her every action and instinct. Anita, the younger sister, lives with a well-to-do dandy who does the same. So they're both being controlled by men, one poor, one wealthy. Annie got herself a husband. Anita got herself a man, Cobb remarks. Both end up being cast out by their men. Annie is falsely accused of adultery, and Anita is thrown out when she develops a goiter. The sisters get back together and attempt to eke out a living. Anita tells her sister, "You go straight and I go crooked, and the best either one of us gets is the worst of it. Sis, what the hell's wrong with this rotten world anyway?" Cobb concludes this modern theme by arguing, brute force ruled, and the man, being physically the stronger, dominated society and women. Chatterton makes quite a point out of that because he sees that as being a more European style of a story. It's a very serious story, and it's pre-ERA, and it's not the story that you would think of Cobb writing.